We're getting some movement in altcoins, and I love to see it, not because of the movement in altcoins, but if you look at the altcoins that are running, they're pretty much the same altcoins that we've been telling you to buy for the last couple of weeks. I'm going to toggle here to the weekly, and you can see that the altcoins that are running, Near, Telegram, Rune, Arweave, Render. And if you compare that to our list, Near, Telegram, Rune, we haven't got Render on this list, but we have been telling you to go and buy the AI narrative. Now, the reason why our tokens are moving is not coincidental. The reason why our tokens are moving is because, number one, we are plugged into the VC scene. We know exactly what's happening and we know exactly what narratives the VCs are buying. We also know how to beat the VCs, which is what we're going to be talking about today. I'm going to show you today what narratives the VCs are actually buying. I'm going to also show you how you can beat the VCs at their game and make sure that you're not the retail person who's buying the VC bags. Today's going to be one of the biggest, most alpha-filled shows we've ever done. I recommend that you watch this till the end, and I guarantee you that when you come out of here, you're going to come out of here smarter and probably going to come out of here richer. So if that makes you excited, let's get the show on the road. While we're getting the show on the road, I want you guys to destroy. I want you to obliterate the like button, because today is about alpha, and today we're in a green day, and it's not an ordinary green day. It's our coins that are running. So let's go. Let's go, go, go. I love to see the green days, but you know what I love even more? I love knowing that when we get into a token, or when we tell our community to get into a token, we then get reports like this. We get reports that Pantera's capital founder, Pantera being one of the biggest funds in the world, and their founder coming out and basically saying that the largest investment they've ever made, they've actually made into the Telegram ecosystem. We've been calling the Telegram ecosystem as one of our biggest conviction bets actually for a hell of a long time, along with Arweave. And if you look at Arweave today, Arweave absolutely exploding. $44. We told you to buy this at $27. And as I said to you, look, this is not a coincidence. It's number one, because we do the research. And it's number two, because we're tapped into the VC scene. And we know what the narratives they're looking at are. And we also know how to beat the VCs. And that's really what today is about. And remember, today is our Friday banter. So we have amazing guests for you, two of the best VCs in the world, two of the best VCs in the world coming here today and telling you not only how to trade like a VC and how to invest like a VC, but also how to beat the VCs. Before we get into it, just a couple of formalities. First of all, if you're not subscribed to the channel, what the fuck are you waiting for? Subscribe to the channel. Let's get the show on the road. Smash the like button. The more you like, the more alpha these guests are going to give. And I promise you today, they're going to give you incredible, incredible, incredible alpha. Then I want to remind you that our Friday banters are brought to you by NordVPN. Now, look, I'm tired of sounding like a broken record when it comes to the VPN. But I say to you, if you are surfing crypto and you don't have a VPN, you're absolutely, absolutely crazy. Why? Because you're exposing your IP address. You can see right now I'm not surfing with a VPN because I'm on a work laptop. But you can see that I've exposed my IP address and I've exposed my location. Now, the reason why that's dangerous is, well, number one, because hackers know exactly where you are. And that makes you pretty much a honeypot because they know exactly how to hack you guys. Number two is that the authorities know exactly where you're at. And if you think you're protected from the authorities, just think about this. Every time you use a DeFi protocol, every time you use a centralized exchange, you are exposing your IP address. You're exposing your digital identity. And if you thought you were protected because, oh, well, you know, I use Proton Mail. Well, you don't, because Proton Mail also handed information to the government, which means that what you want to do is you want to surf anonymously. And the only way to surf anonymously is to always make sure that when you're trading in crypto, you're using a VPN. A VPN is a very simple thing to use. Basically, how it works is you choose the country that you want to pretend you're from. You press the connect button. And then from that point on, they think you're actually in Slovenia or what's onion over VPN? Well, Netherlands, South Africa, Korea. I can decide to be wherever I want to be. That's how you want to be surfing in crypto. Now, listen, if you want to get a VPN, there is a link below. If you use the link below, it's this link over here, you pay less than $3 a month to get your VPN. I think you pay like $2.98. The next thing that I'd recommend is once you've got your money and once you've got your VPN, you need to get this Nord Threat Protection. So it's called Threat Protection. You click this link over here. The reason why, this is not what we want to see. This is exactly it. We are being flagged as malware here. This is exactly what. You need to get threat protection because it is what flags Websites as being malicious, and those are the websites that actually land up stealing your funds. Okay, so make sure that you get Nord, make sure that you get threat protection. At the same time, you are protecting your crypto and you're supporting the channel. All right, so before we get into the big interviews of the day and the big show of the day, I do want to remind you guys that we are giving away 1 million Gami tokens to users of DBridge. For those of you who don't know who DBridge is, DBridge are the bridge that allows you to bridge from any chain to any chain. We've given away $1 million worth of Gami. All you need to do is go to the link below, which says, let's find the one that says DBridge. There must be one there that says DBridge. Let's have a look here. Let's have a look. Where is our DBridge link? Where is it? Hardas, what am I missing? I've got so many.
There it says Gami accept.
Okay, hold on. I'm going down. Well, okay, $1 million. There we go. So one says $1 million in Gami airdrop to DBridge network users. You click here. If you use the bridge when you click here, you will automatically get a Gami airdrop, and you will also get an airdrop in DBridge's airdrop, which is coming, I think, pretty soon. They haven't given you a time. Use the bridge, get 2 airdrops in one. Anyway, guys, listen. So as I said, generally, we're moving up, but the sideways action is killing a lot of people. I wonder how our guests are feeling about this sideways chop. I've got 2 amazing guests here. I've got Melton back with us today, and I've got Joe here for, I think, the first time on Banter, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Amazing. Well, then let's start with you. How are you feeling about this sideways chop, 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 72 days of sideways chop, 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 chop? It's actually not really sideways. It's sideways and slightly down. It's Bitcoin sideways. It's altcoins completely getting obliterated. If you look at them on the 1 month, like, these altcoins are down 40%, 30%. Generally, how are you feeling about the price movement?
I feel great. I mean, Q1 is exactly what we kind of had a plan for. We were convinced that Q1 was going to be a ripper with the narrative around ETF flows and then the actual flows landing. Global liquidity was ticking up pretty dramatically, and it really actually started to slow down at the end of March. And so on April 3rd, if you took a look at the global liquidity chart, it actually saw a pretty big reversal in global liquidity, which was the beginning of the drawdown in April. So, you know, we actually got in a defensive posture at the end of March, early April, took a bunch of profits and moved to a bunch of cash waiting to buy the dip. You know, you rip like you do for 7 straight months in Bitcoin up, like, you're going to have a pullback. The question is, as a trader, like, you know, if you think you're just going to make a profit 100% of the time, you're kidding yourself. You're going to give some of it back. The key is to not give all of it back. And so, you know, by raising some cash when things were a bit euphoric, especially with what was happening with the meme coin mania in March, to understanding that, hey, there's the halving coming, there's tax loss selling, all these narratives that may potentially drive retail price action lower. But for me, it was really flows and global liquidity. That was the signal to me that, hey, this is probably a time to kind of pull back on risk assets. And crypto wasn't necessarily, you know, devoid of that. Altcoins getting hammered is expected when Bitcoin drops 15%. We actually think now, based on the macro outlook of what happened with Jerome Powell at his last press conference, as well as what's happening with the tax receipts and the TGA, and Yellen effectively saying, like, I'm going to go buy off the run bonds. All this stuff is positive for a global, from a liquidity standpoint. So I think April was probably your chance to buy the dip, which we did. So, you know, fingers crossed that we have a better May.
Okay, so you're thinking that the worst is pretty much over. I mean, you're talking the same as what the stochastic RSIs are saying. The stochastic RSIs are pretty much at the bottom. They look like they're about to start turning. You think that we've had the buying opportunity, or we still may be in the buying opportunity, but all the good news is, I mean, all the news is starting to look much better. Jerome Powell speaking this week, looking much better. Yellen and her yield curve games looking a little bit better. You're starting to sound a bit more positive.
Yeah, I mean, look, like, the thing about technical analysis indicators, depending on your time frame, it's they're backward looking. You actually can't forecast based on price action in the past, but they are really, really solid when you have a confluence of indicators, not an individual one. And so if you actually look at, like, the weekly and monthly time frames, things are still relatively overbought. But on the daily time frames, you know, I think last week, I guess end of April, beginning of May, you started to see, you know, things like the Williams percent R, your stochastics, your RSIs, your Bollinger Bands, all these things were getting in a pretty oversold state, which is good in a bull market because that's when you actually want to buy the dip. I think the key to understand is things can stay oversold and overbought for a very, very long time. I think you need a confluence of events beyond just your technical analysis indicators. You need to understand things like the broader macroeconomic outlook, global liquidity, what is the Fed doing? It's an election year in the United States. All of these things start to factor in. So, you know, if you're a long-term holder, I think you buy dips when you get into oversold territory on the daily timeframes, but you actually want your weekly and monthly timeframes to be overbought because that suggests bullish momentum longer term.
Amazing. Malcolm, how are you feeling? Are you feeling that, like, we've had the shakeout? I know you've been here for a long time. I remember when I got into crypto, you had already been here for like multiple cycles. So you've experienced this all like 80 different times. How are you feeling about the price action? Do you think that we've had this correction, so to speak? Like, do you think that this correction is corrected and it's time to maybe start the next leg up? Or do you think that there's still some more blood to come?
Well, maybe I'll take just a slightly different angle than Joe, i.e. the Michael Saylor of Bonk, which I love that title for you, Joe. Look, and I think the technicals and macro, obviously very important. That's not my focus. The thing I've said for the last 5 years, and I'll continue to say, it's all about flows. Flows, flows, flows. Now that we have the ETF, everyone's saying my favorite word, which is flows. You know, we've been tracking flows for the last 3 years. If we look at flows for the first 3 months of the year, we got Bitcoin ETF approval Jan 10th. What happened on Jan 10th? We saw two really important flow narratives start to emerge. Number one, Grayscale, massive outflows, most outflows an ETF has ever seen in such a short time frame. Over $10 billion of Bitcoin came out of Grayscale. But at the same time, that outflow was offset by inflow into the new ETF complex. Obviously, IBIT, the BlackRock product, is leading the charge there. Fidelity picking up a lot. Obviously, there's a longer tail there of other issuers. But it's really BlackRock and Fidelity leading the charge here. And the story is, by the end of Q1, net inflows, right? So if we take total inflows and we deduct the outflows, primarily from Grayscale, the net number is still positive inflow to the tune of roughly $10 billion. Like, that's a very impressive number.
That's 11.6 billion. 11.6 billion. So it's higher than $10 billion.
Huge number, right? All of that, I think, contributed to Bitcoin grinding upward. We started the year around 50. We hit an all-time high, 73. Now, if we look at the four-year cycle, right, as crypto grandma, as our resident crypto grandma.
Okay, grandma.
No, seriously, though, like, I've been here since 2015. You know, this four-year cycle that we've seen, which is the cycle everyone sort of anchors to psychologically, we have never in one of these four-year Bitcoin halving cycles, which has historically defined the pattern for crypto markets, right? We have never seen Bitcoin hitting an all-time high prior to a halving. So this is very different. And what I think people aren't talking about and thinking about enough is how the ETF flows are fundamentally changing the nature of how we look at flows and data and technical analysis in the Bitcoin space in particular. Bitcoin's still 50% of the market, so it's a really important data set to track. And I think fundamentally, the ETF flows have distorted the four-year cycle, which is why we saw an all-time high right prior to the halving. We had the halving happen. This halving's been a really interesting one because we also have new fee income, right, on Bitcoin. We have ERC-20s, ordinals, runes that are also distorting market dynamics. Now, what we've seen like a couple of weeks post-halving is we've finally seen hash rate like starting to get priced much lower, much less demand for block space on Bitcoin. So I think this year, what's made it challenging to map price action and map expectations against these four-year cycles we've historically seen, where after the halving, typically we see a sell-off, we trade sideways into Q4, Bitcoin starts to pick up, and then new all-time high typically hit in December or Q1 of the following year. This year, all of that has gotten distorted because there's fundamental market dislocations that are occurring as a result of dislocations and where flows are happening, right? Instead of flows happening in the spot market or in the perps market, we now have this new vehicle, the ETF. We have new players. There's a ton of data opacity now because stuff's not happening on chain necessarily anymore, right? When you have institutions entering the game, moving Bitcoin around on an internal ledger is very different than moving Bitcoin around on the blockchain, right? A public ledger. So I think it's just fundamentally changed the nature of how we look at flows. It'll be interesting to see how Glassnode and sort of other services that analyze public blockchain data are going to have to change the way they interpret, analyze data based on these new entrants and just the opacity that exists when you get these institutions moving Bitcoin as ledger entries as opposed to on a public ledger. But I think as a result of sort of what I've articulated, there's just been some fundamental differences in this cycle. If I had a crystal ball, if Joe had a crystal ball, we wouldn't be here, right? Like we'd be sitting on an island somewhere printing billions of dollars. Hopefully we'll still do that this cycle. But I just think things have fundamentally shifted. And then one more thing I want to bring up that's not Bitcoin. Last cycle, there are a ton of projects that raised capital at insane valuations, multi-billion dollar valuations. Those projects need to go public. So I think there's something like 70 token issuances that need to happen at over $1 billion FDV or fully diluted network value in order for them to sort of achieve the pricing they did in their last venture round. So there's this really massive backlog. We also see it in the broader venture landscape. In America, there are 1,200 unicorns that are privately held multi-billion dollar companies that at some point need liquidity, right? Will they go public? IPO windows like still firmly shut. Crypto has that same go public overhang. In this instance, it's people launching tokens. So there's a massive overhang of supply that's coming onto the market. Not clear where that demand's coming from, right? Well, because we don't have the large hedge funds or the growth funds buying publicly listed tokens now.
Okay, so this is a point that I've been talking about a lot, which is the fact that so many projects are coming onto the market at such big valuations. You have Eigenlayer, you said there's 70 of them that are coming onto the market. I think Eigenlayer is coming on today or tomorrow or something like that. Who's buying all of this? I mean, like retail is not here. As you said, the hedge funds pretty much all got back, got into these rounds at the last valuation. Chances are they're looking to exit when the token comes to market. I think that's one of the things that's causing the altcoin bleed, because we're in a position now where the altcoins are just basically bleeding out because there's just no buyers. I mean,
and I think this is, again, there's a discussion going on right now on crypto Twitter around this topic, right? I think one of the issues is retail now understands the game, which is venture bids up private rounds. These tokens list at multi-billion dollar valuations. Retail buys the top and then they just get dumped on. That's a tired narrative. Nobody wants to do that anymore, which is why I think you're seeing such a weak bid for a lot of these venture-backed, like really high valuation tokens. And there's a lot of artificial market manipulation that's happening by having low initial float, right? Like people are playing games with supply and demand, initial float. Nobody's looking at the FDVs, right? Which is the fully diluted value of the network and what the token price implies. Like if you look at WorldCoin, the current price of WorldCoin implies something insane, like an $80 billion FDV. A company that has maybe, you know, a couple million wallets, not a criticism, but people are playing these games, sort of manipulating game, the stats, the metrics. What I think is people realize what a game is. And you always want to play games that you understand, games where you can win, which is why I think retail is gravitating towards meme coins and other assets, where they can actually make money as opposed to being, you know, players in the shell game where they don't have any edge, they don't have any advantage.
I'm so glad you brought I'm so glad you brought this all up, and I actually want to spend time on it. So how do you think that situation resolves itself? And when I say resolves itself, like the only way that I see the situation resolving itself is that VCs get punished for the investments that they make. The only way VCs get punished for the investments that they make is if retail doesn't buy the tokens from them, and then they don't have exit liquidity. Like if you think of like some of these rounds that went to market, projects that are one year old or so, coming onto the market with a pre-market with a $3 billion valuation, trying to come onto the market with a $20 billion valuation so that the VCs are up 6x. Retail is basically saying, look, we're not here. There's nobody home. There's nobody here to buy your tokens.
But hold on, let's just go back a step. I think one really important thing to remember, there's a lot of conversation right now around like, what is a fair price? Market sets the price, right? The market decides the price. And at the end of the day, this is why I always like to look at flows and think about who are natural buyers and who are natural sellers. I think the issue right now is buyers are still mostly speculative because the majority of the networks we have today, right, the token is sort of trading at a future expected value versus what's currently in production and being delivered today, right? What we saw with stock in 2021, like Zoom trading at a 1600x forward EPS was insane, right? Like a 1600x forward price to earnings multiple, right? So basically Zoom's price that was trading at during the pandy was 1600 times their earnings. That's a crazy multiple. We're seeing the same thing with these networks. But again, people who are in the market decide what the price is. So what I think we see, I don't think VCs get punished. I think what we see is changes in the dynamics of supply and demand to try to change the dynamics of how price is formed and how price settles. And the second thing I think we see, and what I'm excited about as an investor, is like, I want to see more projects go to market at a much lower value.
Yes.
So that the game of projects going to market is not so value extractive. The issue is there's just also a huge number of venture funds. I think, you know, there might be more venture funds than actual projects in crypto. So I also feel like the dynamics just around capital have gotten really distorted. How does that correct? I don't know. It probably takes some time to play out. But we're seeing that in other asset classes as well. I don't think it's by any means unique to crypto. We see it in traditional
ventures. I do think it's more unique to crypto because there's more projects coming on with quicker liquidity. I don't think in the traditional VC game, VCs get liquidity as quickly as they get in crypto. I mean, I've seen rounds in crypto where there's a project that that starts raising at 10 million. You talk to them again 6 months later that 50 million, and 12 months after the first raise that a billion. And you kind of go, well, how did you build $1 billion? Well, no, it's just the fact that you think that you're going to get liquidity soon. Joe, does this market dynamic worry you at all? I'm starting to feel like in the last cycle, we made a lot of investments into early stage projects. And now we're kind of saying, listen, just keep your money and buy the projects on the market. Because chances are they're going to come onto the market and they're going to trade under the last round anyway. Because there's actually no buyers out there today. Because A, retail is not actually here. That's what the data is saying to us. The data is saying, look, when we look at the YouTube views of this cycle versus last cycle, retail's not actually here. The bulk of retail is not actually here. When we look at the flows, retail's not actually here. There are no buyers. There's no buyers for these projects. There are multiple projects. Meltem said 70 projects coming up. I mean, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of them. All of them over that raised on the markets at over $1 billion valuation. How do you think that this ends? Because to me, it feels like it ends badly for the early investors. And maybe in this case, retail actually win because they kind of say, well, you know, we're just going to trade meme coins that we start buying at a valuation of 40K and bid them up to $10 billion. And maybe that's why we're getting this meme coin mania. What do you think?
Look, as an early stage investor, I'm actually pretty comfy with the position that we're in right now with our investments. Like, you know, if you're one of, I don't know, 179 VCs that only invest in the Ethereum ecosystem, yeah, you're probably feeling some pain right now because there's, I don't know, what, like 100 L2s. They all have tokens. They all have absurd valuations. And I've been bearish on L2s for 3 years now, so, or 2.5 years now, right? Like, so I see that side of the equation of some of the folks that decided to, you know, follow some of the tier one firms and just assume that this cycle was going to be like the last cycle where they can just spray and pray across anything Ethereum related. They're going to probably have challenges there. I think there are other projects and other ecosystems that are doing extremely well and that also have a lot of promise, right? So on the one hand, it is no surprise that I've been involved in Solana ecosystem for a long time, but Dan Held recently joined the firm for us to go invest in early stage Bitcoin DeFi projects. We are extremely bullish on that. I know Meltem is too, right? Like, we're extremely bullish on that space. The second thing I do want to kind of like underscore here is like, investing in crypto is, and like the current amount of people invested in crypto is not a zero-sum game. This is the big difference right now, I think, with looking at retail's not here, who's going to be the incremental buyer, is like the last time we had a ton of retail activity, you had interest rates at zero. We have interest rates at 5.5%. The Fed hasn't even begun cutting yet, but you have Riksbank coming out cutting, the ECB is cutting, all of the other major banks have literally told the market they're cutting rates. This is a coordinated effort to juice global liquidity into the second half of this year. This is happening, right? So I think one of the key things to underscore here is if you're looking one for one where we are currently in the cycle and suggesting that retail isn't here and they're not going to buy VC bags, et cetera, look at the macro picture. You have 550 basis points increased in interest rates, right? So where do you think all that cash is? It's in money market funds, and this includes retail, right? Certainly here in the United States, you have an enormous amount of cash that's sitting on the sidelines that eventually is going to get deployed. Now, is all that going to come to crypto? No, but it's some of it is, because some of it's going to go further out the risk curve than something like just stocks. The other thing I want to point out as it relates to VCs, and like just to be clear, like I was a founder. I raised from VCs. I don't really like the VC model. I don't like a lot of VCs, but I'm a VC now. So guess what? I can share with you information that you're probably not going to hear from most VCs. And the reality is that if a hot deal is cruising around Sand Hill Road in Silicon Valley, and it's at a $50 million valuation, and then a month later, it's a $150 million valuation, and then 6 months later, it's a $1 billion valuation, that happens all the time. And you could see it during the COVID boom with anybody that was doing remote work-related stuff. You could see it in the mobile boom. There was an iPhone app, I think it was called Color or something, that raised $35 million off of a deck from the tier one VC firms. They shipped literally nothing, right? So this is not specific.
No, I know. I know it's not specific.
In crypto VC is that you end up with liquidity faster, which implies that if you're a VC in crypto, you better learn how to manage a liquid portfolio like a hedge fund manager. If you don't know how to actually hedge your positions or work with dealers or work with desks that can actually work your orders into the market or create options contracts to hedge against them, that's on you. Now, the beauty is most of these VCs are long only, which is fine. They have 10-year horizons to hold these tokens. They don't. One of the things about these token unlock events, people think that they're super bearish. They actually don't understand that VCs don't know how to trade. They're like, the day that an unlock happens, they're like, oh, there's $1 billion worth of X token that's going to be on the market. It's like, these guys don't even know how to put a limit order in. You think they're going to dump all this on the market? Now, I'm generalizing and being hyperbolic for a reason. Not every VC doesn't know how to do that, but the majority of them do not, because this is not their skill set. Their skill set is to look 10 years out, 15 years out, and invest in founders and companies and protocols that they believe will have a meaningful difference in, say, Web3 and crypto, and play the long game, right? So I want to be like super clear that I don't think this notion of this is a zero sum game because of where we are right now has to do with you know, retail or their lack of involvement. I think it's a macro issue. And then furthermore, that most of these VCs are not going to, you know, some of them are going to feel pain because they've been overinvested in certain, I would say, categories. But I think for the most part, as liquidity comes back in the system, you're going to see rates getting cut. You're going to see a lot more of these tokens actually be held by VCs longer term.
Okay, let me ask you a question. Most of the viewers that are watching this right now aren't VCs. They are retail. How does retail compete with VCs in this game? And the reason why I say that is because, you know, we just saw this with, for example, Eigenlayer. And I hate to bring up a project, but to me, Eigenlayer is, as much as I love their tech, and I think that they are the smartest kids on the block, I think that the game was rigged against retail. I think that VCs got in very early at very, very, very low valuations. I think VCs got wind of when the cutoffs and when the staking, when the points were going to start. And you can see it quite clearly in the flows. If you go look on chain, you can clearly see when money was deposited into Eigenlayer contracts and when money was withdrawn. Coincidentally, it happened exactly after the snapshot. And if you look at the distribution of points, the VCs, who were the early investors, were also the ones that accrued most of the points. Okay, to me, what it feels like, and look, we're a VC too, but to me, what it feels like is that the game is rigged against retail. And that when I look at this game and I say, okay, if I'm a retail investor, how am I going to make money in this game when the good deals are, as you say, floating around Sand Hill Road, and only people that have got good value to give are getting access to it? What do you say to the probably 100,000 people that are going to watch the show, who are 99.9% of them are going to be retail investors? How do they make money in this game? Do they go and play meme coins and basically skip the Eigenlayers and the monads that are coming out later on this year and everything else? What's their formula for making money?
Yeah, look, I mean, everybody's going to be different, right? It depends on your financial situation, your age, your risk tolerance, et cetera. But I'll put it to you this way, right? Like, if everybody's talking about something and everybody's looking for value in the same place, it's probably not there. Eigenlayer is a prime example of this. To be super clear, Eigenlayer's leap in computer science with what they're doing with restaking, effectively enabling middleware to be created on top of any proof of stake network, is a huge technological innovation, period, full stop. Now, you can talk about the investment side, the token, et cetera, but when everybody is looking at the exact same thing for value, you're not going to find value there. That's just a fact. And by the way, this concept of it being RID, welcome to finance and Wall Street, right? And you're saying, well, wait a second, crypto is supposed to be the anti-Wall Street. It's supposed to be kind of decentralized, democratized. That is true. And so the market can dictate that. Well, maybe next time, instead of parking all of your Ethereum in, you know, the staking contract for a new hot protocol, for example, or an L2 or whatever, that all the VCs are invested in, maybe you shouldn't do that. Maybe find another place where people aren't looking, that maybe VCs aren't wise enough or don't have a pulse on culture to understand where there is actual value and opportunity.
It's called meme coins. It's called meme coins.
A lot of people that I meet on crypto Twitter, within it, like, they basically want to look like the easy button to get rich, and it's not easy, right? And so is it fair? No, life's not fair. Get a helmet. Like, this is a big boy game, big girl game. Like, you got to play the game, right? And so what I'm getting to is, if you're watching this video and you're saying, man, it's messed up that VCs get to get in early and this and that, it's like, that's the game. So you got to play the game to best of your ability. And my view is to be looking for value where other people aren't looking.
And just to be clear, Ran, it's not just meme coins. I think meme coins are an easy meta to grasp, but today meme coins are 2-3% of the overall crypto market. Bitcoin is still 50% of the total market cap of crypto, right? Meme coins went from 1% of the market to 2.5%. I think they're now 2.5-3% of the overall market. Like, I bought Doge at 10 cents. Doge ran all the way to 20 cents, right? That, for me, I thought was a good investment because it outperformed Bitcoin over the same time horizon. I, living in the US, also think about taxes. So I bought the Dogecoin in a retirement account, in a tax-advantaged account, so I didn't have to pay taxes or cap gains on my short-term trades. So I think, to Joe's point, one of the challenges right now is, like, there's a game we're all playing, right? The game is called crypto markets, just like capital markets. I used to trade commodities, traded equities very briefly and very poorly. Now I've been in crypto for the last decade. Step one is know the game you're playing. Two, decide which game you want to play. I would say for a lot of investors, if they would have bought Bitcoin, right, they probably would have outperformed a basket of alts. There's been a lot of value creation in Bitcoin. Most funds, I don't think, outperform Bitcoin over a time horizon that matches the duration of their fund. It's not a criticism. I think it's very easy to look at the market, see these eye-popping numbers and be like, oh, VCs are making all this money. But what you don't see is, for every Eigenlayer they invested in, there's four or five other L2s they invested a lot of money in that are trading at below where they invested. So they're losing money, right? So
can I make this a very simple question? If you were sitting today as a retail investor and you had the same access that a retail investor had, and you had $10,000 to invest today, okay, now... Yep. Now, let me just actually add a little bit of spice to the question. You're 25 years old. You're not looking for Bitcoin type returns because you just don't believe that Bitcoin's going to give you the next bucket of returns. How would you play this cycle? Now, let's be honest. It's easy for us because, you know, we're all VCs. We all have access because of who we are and whatever else. But I'm looking on the other side of the camera now. If you had $10,000, you were 25 years old, you didn't want to invest in Bitcoin, how do you play the cycle?
Yep. The way I would play the cycle, I would think thematically first, like, what themes do I think are going to be big in crypto? DePIN, I think, is an easy one. Everyone gets intuitively, it makes a lot of sense. One, SocialFi, what's happening with DeGen on Farcaster and other SocialFi sort of tokens. That would be my second one. Third one, I would buy a basket of meme coins, Joe Bowden, with like some of these that have just seen a lot of organic community traction. I would probably pick a fourth theme, which is like strong technical innovation. So you could have a small allocation within your basket that you build, but I would look at what are the key narrative themes, right? What are emerging projects? I am a value investor. I'm very reticent to touch anything at over $100 million valuation just because I've played that game. I'm not good at that game. I don't have an edge there because I'm not a price setter. I'm a price taker at that point. I like to play in the earlier side, but that means I take a lot more risk. So if you're comfortable, you know, with it, maybe set your filter for projects you invest in at sub-100, sub-250 mil FDV when you invest, because then that leaves room for multiple accretion. But you have to be willing to take risk and do things that are non-consensus, which requires you putting in the time. Like, I wish there was an easy button. Why do I have bags under my eyes? Why does Joe, I'm so sorry, Joe. Why does Joe have bags under his eyes? Why are we both like...
Joe used to have hair. Before Joe got into crypto, he used to have hair, and then he got into crypto, and then 2 weeks later,
at like 3 a.m. on a Saturday when we should be out like at the club, or I don't know what you do when you're in your, you know, late 30s, or we should be sleeping maybe, but we're messaging each other. Why? Because our job literally is hunting. We're like hunting all the time for non-consensus things, so we make money for our LPs, right? Because we're fiduciaries. So I think it's just tough, because as much as I want to say, oh yeah, retail, it's super easy, here's what you do, like, that is just not the game. But pick themes, pick narratives, follow people who share alpha. Joe has a Telegram channel. I have a room on a Friend Tech. If you want to come jump in my room, it's me shitposting.
Guys, just so you're clear, when she says jump in her room, she's talking about her room on Frantic. It's not the room at the apartment. It's the room on Frantic. That's what she's saying. Okay. You know what? You know what? Now you opened the can of worms. You said that, you know, as VCs, you're always alpha hunting. You guys said that you're texting each other at all hours of the day, alpha hunting. Give us some of the alpha. What are you hunting? What right now? Where are the arrows aimed at? Like, Joe, maybe you started off and you said Solana ecosystem. You mentioned that now you're spreading your wings into Bitcoin L2s.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, look, like, you know, so the question is, like, if you're a retail person, and by the way, like, everybody should listen to what Meltem just said, because that's basically the same thing that I would have suggested you do, is follow certain narratives and build a basket. Like, that's really, like, if you got 10 grand and that's how you're going to spend it and you're willing to risk it, like, that's what I would do. With respect to, like, the tokens that are currently available, right? So, like, Bitcoin DeFi and, you know, meta protocols on Bitcoin, there's really no tokens per se, right? Like, you can trade runes and BRC20s, but those are meme coins. For the projects and protocols that are building, they haven't issued tokens yet. So you can't really, unfortunately, participate in those. So as a retail investor, what I would do is look for tokens that currently exist. I recommend the Solana ecosystem because I have a view that Solana is dramatically undervalued relative to Ethereum. From a relative value perspective, I think Solana is dramatically underpriced. Well, if the price of Solana rises, what happens to the ecosystem tokens within it? You have more people in the Solana ecosystem trading on Solana, you know, using different apps and games, et cetera, on Solana. And the types of applications, Meltem alluded to this with things like DPIN, they're just not possible on other chains. Like, you can't have Render, you can't have Helium, you can't have a mobile phone network.
So hold on. Ethereum. Hold on. Do we, I mean,
those types of tokens are actually going to be quite valuable, in my opinion.
Do we all agree that Solana is right now, in terms of the layer one race? So when I say the layer one race, I don't mean the layer one that's scattered with lots of layer twos and needs a billion layer twos to actually survive. Do we all agree that right now, as it goes into the layer one race, Solana is the clear winner or clearly in the lead?
I mean, Joe has
to do. Joe's really hungry. Like, Joe's really hungry. I mean,
Joe, why don't you eat?
Okay, it's so like 9 a.m. here.
Okay, so I want to say two things. Number one, I dropped two pieces of alpha on this very show last December. Stacks. I talked about Stacks for like a solid 2 minutes. It was 60 cents when I talked about it. It went to $3, now $2. If you followed my Stacks call, that's a great place to look. And then there's Welsh, Arcadico, Alex, other stuff in the Stacks ecosystem. That's like the charts looking really nice. I also talked about Render. At the time, Render was $3. It ran all the way to
$11.
So those are two pieces of alpha I have dropped on my Twitter, on here, on broadcast television in the United States of America. Like, people are talking about it. You just have to listen and you have to take action.
Okay, so now we're all listening. Meltem, we're all we got it. We're listening. What's next?
So four ecosystems I'm spending time in. Number one, Bitcoin. I think innovation in and around Bitcoin, really interesting. I own Pups. I own Manco Wanko. I own Rune coin on Bitcoin, right? So those are kind of my like Bitcoin token plays. I own a couple of Bitcoin NFTs. I own a couple of ordinals that I think are interesting. And then obviously I am looking at all of the Bitcoin L2s that are merging. Building on Bitcoin is one where you can actually farm BOB tokens right now by depositing wrapped Bitcoin on the ETH network. But like you can participate in these networks. BOB is one to watch. Cetrea will be launching soon. That's one to watch. But there's a whole tracker on L2 Watch. There's like a Bitcoin L2 Watch website where they list all of these things. I've posted about Bitcoin L2s. I'll post about it again on Twitter tomorrow when the show goes out. Number one. Number two, Solana ecosystem spending a lot of time in. So Render moved from Ethereum over to Solana. I think Solana is on its way to become the de facto home of DePIN, just given low transaction fees, high transaction throughput. And so a lot of DePIN on Solana is very exciting. DePIN projects I'm watching, GeoNet, HiveMapper, Render, I still think has a lot of potential. Hyperbolic is a new distributed GPU cloud that I think is interesting. Super smart, like Math Olympiad team. There's a couple of things around like AI workflows, compute aggregation that are launching on Solana. I'll tweet about it. People have to read it and like watch that space, but that's exciting. I think Sui and Aptos, the two Move ecosystems.
Which one would you bet on, Sui or Aptos? If I said to you red or black, you're in the casino right now, and I said to you, put your money on either Aptos or Sui, which one of the two do you put your money on?
I haven't decided yet. I'm spending time in both ecosystems. I really haven't decided yet. I was just at Sui Base Camp in Paris. I'm going to the Aptos conference in Korea in September. I talk to both teams regularly. I live in projects on both protocols. I haven't decided yet. I need to decide, Ran, but one of those two will be a big
So I put my money. I put my money onto Sui. I put my money onto Sui. I've evaluated both teams. For me, okay. Just to be clear, I just want to just show you how aligned we are in terms of like, I published a list of my 10 of now 15 most highest conviction projects. So again, I chose something in the Move ecosystem. I chose Sui. And I chose Build on Bitcoin. I mean, it's not a public token yet, but for me, BOB is the most legit upcoming Bitcoin layer 2. They don't call it layer 2. They call it, I think, an omni layer or something like that. But
exactly.
Yeah, for me.
And that's important about BOB as well, is like they actually have a technical roadmap. I think a lot of Bitcoin L2s don't have really much technical documentation. Like Merlin Chain has their own CDL, but there's really very little. There's very little in the roadmap. I think one of the important things to remember that I try to remember is like speculation is well and good, but at the end of the day, if we want this market to persist and be sustainable, like we have to invest in things and focus our energy on things that have long-term viability. So while some investors, you know, are more focused on short-term value capture, I think for me, I'm just a longer-term investor because I don't understand how to
as much. Malcolm, can I just ask you, in your investment history, and I know you've been around here since 2015, what percentage of your return? Grandma is reporting for duty. The hottest grandma in the world, I'll tell you that. what percentage of your returns have come from one cycle tokens, and what percentage of your returns have come from two and three cycle tokens? In other words, when I look at my portfolio, 90% of my returns have come from tokens that I've held for three cycles. When I say tokens that I've held for three cycles, Bitcoin, Ethereum, Solana, Arweave, Kujira. If I look at my portfolio, those are tokens that I don't have any tokens that are one cycle tokens that have given me like life-changing returns or real returns. Have you had luck on a one cycle token? And I'm going to say if you did, it's probably luck more than anything else, right? Joe, what do you think? Like, where are the returns coming from?
I've had one token in each cycle where like it's a very quick a turnaround. For me, the framework I follow though for monetization is a third, a third, a third. So on all of the tokens I own, I typically still own a third of my original position just because I have this framework for my PA in terms of how I liquidate. The other thing I will say, if I look in aggregate, I also built two companies over the last decade I've been in crypto. And the returns from building CoinShares and taking it public have also kind of matched the returns of investing in crypto. So there's also tremendous upside to being a builder and an operator. I'm building a new investment firm now, right? So it's not just deploying capital into the market for me. There's also tremendous returns to be had by putting in sweat equity and building a business in the industry.
Just, you've probably seen this just for our viewers, what is the market cap of CoinShares today? I mean, I know that you were one of the original people, original founders in CoinShares. What's the market cap today of CoinShares?
$350 million.
And that's quite a...
We're trading below our book value, by the way. So it's still a really great like value stock. I'm not...
Not financial advice. Not financial advice.
We just paid a great dividend. It's a great business. We're reporting our results next week. It's a cash flow generating business, much like a Grayscale, right? But I think there's a lot of upside also in building durable businesses in the crypto industry. Like Joe's building business, I'm building business, you're building a business, Ran. Like for people, if you're spending all your time in crypto and you're investing all your time thinking about it, like why don't you build a business in it? Because then you get to actually do crypto full time. And like, it's a job and you can build sweat equity, and it doesn't have to be an investment firm or a protocol. There are a ton of services businesses in PR, media, design, outsourced CFO services, consulting. Like a lot of people have built really great businesses.
There's absolutely no excuse for not starting a business in crypto, because the market is so big. It's global. Anyone can do it. You can write a newsletter. You can switch on a webcam and you can start podcasting. You can, if you're a little bit more advanced, you can start managing money and you can start doing research and stuff like that. There's absolutely no...
Even basic services, Rand, like a lot of people need help with accounting, CFO services. Like some of the basic things that people need help with, you know, you can charge a retainer to have projects where you work with them. I know some people who, you know, just ship host for a living for a couple of different protocols. Mm. So there's a million and one ways to make it in crypto. The only limitation is your willingness to learn and your willingness to like do actual work, not work with like going to or sitting on Twitter. It's like put your fingers on a keyboard, send an email, you know, take a chance.
There's a lot of people watching this, and what I call them entrepreneurs who are in the closet, because they're like, they're entrepreneurs, but then you ask them, what do you do? But I've got a full-time job. No. If you're an entrepreneur, you don't have a full-time job. You leave your job and you actually become an entrepreneur, and there's a good opportunity to do that in crypto. So, Meltem, you gave us some narratives. Joe, I want some narratives from you, and then I want to talk a little bit about meme coins before we go, because, Meltem, I know you love the meme coins. Joe, before we get there, though, so narratives. So for you, Solana, building on Bitcoin, so I'm going to call it Bob, but it's not actually Bob. I know we're aligned there. Tell me, give me some others that you're excited about right now.
Yeah, look, I think so there's within Solana, there's a lot of incredible technological innovation that's happening. You know, so for example, I mentioned it earlier about Eigenlayer, like the big technological innovation there with restaking is enabling middleware to be built on top of the underlying L1. This is coming to Solana. It's going to come to every proof of stake network, by the way. It's not unique to Ethereum. This is coming right now through Jito. And so, you know, I've been an investor in Jito for a long time. I've been a user of Jito for a long time. They are, you know, kind of, I think, on the forefront of a lot of the technical innovation that's happening with the Solana ecosystem. So that's, I think, going to be, I think it's crazy not priced into the value of their network and frankly, their token. This is not financial advice whatsoever, but you know, I kind of look at it and go, if you look at the fully diluted valuation of Eigenlayer and Lido and whatever private valuation Flashbots is, that's Jito. And so, I don't know, seems cheap to me. Furthermore, there are other teams that are building stuff within the Solana ecosystem around restaking. I've met with a couple of these teams.
You're bullish restaking as a narrative. Sounds like you're very bullish restaking as a narrative. Doesn't matter on the chain. It sounds like Solana is your favorite layer one your favorite layer one. And it sounds like as a narrative, you're very bullish on restaking, right?
Well, not as a narrative, more as like the actual technological innovation that comes with it. I think the narrative has already played out, and you saw that with the hype behind Eigenlayer. Now it's actually like, let's ship some code and see what actually works. So, you know, from a narrative perspective, I actually have a view that Solana is the chain for retail, and you see this through the activity with meme coins. But like, we're in the very first inning of meme coins. Yes, Dogecoin and Shiba Inu and these things have been around for a while. But with 20,000 new tokens being launched a day on Solana, frankly, that can't happen on any other L1. And then furthermore, you have things like Pump.Fun that you click two buttons and you have a meme coin. So this stuff's not slowing down. It's not going to stop.
I saw the numbers from Pump.Fun this week. I don't have the tweet yet, but I saw the numbers from Pump.Fun this week. They were making more revenue than Uniswap. I mean, they were literally generating more revenue than Uniswap.
Right. I'm not surprised at all. Like, have you used Uniswap? Have you used Solana and Pump.Fun? There's your answer. I mean, this is why this is the chain for retail. Now, what I will say, and I'll give a shout out to the Base team at Coinbase, because I do think that they actually have a shot at bringing a ton of retail to Base because they have an unfair advantage. Good for them, by the way. 40 million accounts on Coinbase, right? They have a funnel of already crypto users that can go to Base, right? I think Base and Solana are going to be the 1-2 punch as it relates to, like, you know, folks that are retail that want to get into meme coins, and also, you know, these like a layer two or a better user experience on Ethereum, and then things like Solana as well.
What about Telegram? Ton, you're talking about 40 million. They're talking about 900 million users. They're talking about an integrated wallet into an app on our phone. They're talking about USDT integration. They're talking about going all in on crypto. I mean, I was at Token 2049. I saw the founder on the stage telling us about how all into crypto he actually was. How do you position Ton as an ecosystem relative to Base and Solana?
Yeah, I mean, the unfortunate part about Ton is you can't use it in the United States. So the largest market in the U.S., the largest market in the world is the United States, and can't use it. That does not mean Ton won't be valuable globally. 900 million accounts is pretty powerful to flip the switch on. You know, Telegram's core business is not blockchain or blockchain-related dApps. It's messaging. And they've built an amazing application and network that, you know, somehow has grown to nearly a billion users. That's phenomenal. What I would like to see is how is the and by the way, like the team there is, they're great product managers. So I have full confidence that they'll be able to do this. What you don't want to do is bolt on a crypto wallet or bolt on Web3 or bolt on blockchain because it's cool or it's a hype or it's a way to make money. Integrating it in a way that feels frictionless to the end user, I think, is going to be super important as it relates to how Ton rolls this out. I haven't been tracking the developer ecosystem within Ton for a while, but the last I checked maybe a year or so ago, it's been a bit, there wasn't a lot of developer activity.
So I think a lot's changed. I think a lot's changed.
I'm sure it's changed by now, right?
Yeah. All right. We've got 5 more minutes. I want to talk to you guys about meme coins. Where does this go? There are, I think, 250 meme coins that launch a day, if I'm not mistaken. Like, I think that I think those are the numbers at the moment. I mean, first of all, like, good thing or bad thing? Is this a meme coin thing here to stay? Good thing or bad thing?
Can I just give a controversial view on meme coins for one moment, maybe?
Please do.
Okay. So there's meme coins, as I think you're talking about them, which are you know, no utility, no roadmap, just pop culture narrative kind of coins. But I think a lot of the projects in crypto, like the distributed AI stuff, the distributed compute stuff, a lot of those projects are also meme coins. If you look at something like IONET, right, like there was a lot of funny, spicy sort of tweets over the last week where, you know, IONET's project that claims to have all these GPUs, more GPUs than Google and Amazon combined, they actually have 200 on their network. Like, when we say meme coin, I think a lot of the narratives in crypto are meme narratives, like gaming in the last cycle, because none of these games delivered anything like remotely close to an Activision Blizzard delivers. An Activision Blizzard's like multi-billion-dollar company. The idea, you know, that a Axie Infinity is valued the same as an Activision Blizzard, which has shipped like every winning game franchise of the last like decade across multiple consoles. It's kind of silly. So I think meme coins is just like crypto overall. That being said, I think cultural meme coins, what's been really interesting to observe. So I'm limited to what I can trade in my 401k IRA because it's through Gemini. So I have Doge, Shib, Pepe, I think, and maybe a couple other meme coins. I got really excited about cat coins like 2 months ago. I dabbled with the cat coins. that was really fun. I'm not doing the cat coins anymore. I'm still holding a couple. The political coins are really interesting. I think Biden and Trump are like the two main ones, but seeing how those are sort of playing out, particularly over the last day or so with Trump talking about Biden in a press conference. And this morning, apparently, he talked about crypto in a presser. So that's been interesting. But I generally think the financialization of culture is like continuing to happen. Crypto is the greatest casino ever created. And at the end of the day, like people, excuse my language, fucking love to gamble. The casino, huge business. Lottery, huge business. Last year, Super Bowl, biggest year for sports betting ever. Like people just love to gamble. It is part of our human nature. So this idea that like the crypto casino is somehow unnatural is the weirdest thing I've ever heard. Speculation is like the core use case of
and
crypto.
Memes. It's
not, it just is. And memes are the perfect substrate. So I think it is the most logical thing I have ever seen. It is the narrative that makes the most sense. And I think it's just, you got to figure out, are you comfortable with the risk? And then are you comfortable getting rugged? Because most memes are, you know, not there for the long haul. So it's a very interesting, ephemeral game, just like memes. Everyone.
All right, listen, on that note, as you heard, the music's basically telling us that it's time for us to cut it. So guys, I want to thank you. First of all, very high alpha show. And we didn't speak about any of the things that I wanted to speak about, but I think we got a whole lot more. So I think, thank you so much. Thank you for the alpha. Thank you for the honesty. Thank you for the honesty, Malcolm. Good to have you back. Joe, good to have you on. I'm sure that you guys will be here. And actually, you guys make a power combination. So I actually want to bring you guys again together, because I think the two of you guys, the two of you are amazing together. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And to the fam, we will see you guys on Sunday. Remember, on Sunday, we are bringing you the meme show on Banter Plus. You got to be on Banter Plus for the Sunday meme show. Also, remember that if you want to get your hands onto Gummy, probably the biggest, the best place to get your hands onto Gummy right now, either open the account on Bybit, deposit $100, and then trade $500, you get $100 back like for free. But also go and use the DBridge Finance Bridge. And there's a link over here at the DBridge Finance Bridge. Every time that you make a trade, wherever, if you move your tokens from one chain to another chain, you earn more points, not only in DBridge, but you also earn points to get yourself some more Gummy. I will see you guys again on Sunday. Don't miss Sunday. Sunday's a big, big, big meme show. Now with the markets waking up, I think it's going to be a whole lot of fun. Until then, bridge well and trade well, my friends.